Hello and welcome to the Data Protection Made Easy podcast on the 19th of September 2025. This week it was Phil Brining and Kate Santos. What did you make of the session, Kate?
Hi, Phil. I think the session was actually very good. It was good to be back on the on our GDPR news. Very good. We cover a lot, didn't we? So we talked about CCTVs, we talked about facial recognitions, but my highlight was actually a decision made by the European Court about ruling about personalization data is not always personal data. So I really, really like to highlight that as my good thing to
your
take
highlight
off from there.
Your, yes. your favorite topic. Your favorite topic. It was actually my favorite yes. topic. We did talk about a lot. I mean, to say we only got half an hour, we crammed a lot of different stuff in. You know, we're using kind of the news stories as a platform for expanding out on topics. And the whole, you know, the topic about photographs and sensitive personal data being derived from video, that was a good conversation.
Yes.
But I think that, like you, my favorite, and could be, particularly if we had somebody come on and you know, engage in the discussion with us.
It's always it was, good, isn't it?
It was this whole thing, and this whole thing about, you know, what is personal data? You know, it's a movable feast. It's it depends on so many different factors. It isn't easily defined. You know, the black and white of the UK GDPR and the GDPR doesn't do a good enough job of helping practitioners to figure out, is this what I'm looking at now, personal data? And if it is, who does it relate to?
Doesn't that make it more exciting?
Oh, of course it does. Of course. That's one of the things I absolutely love about working in the field of data protection.
Yeah, I think it was very good. We covered a little bit that will potentially, yes or no, depends on the context. What about comments and your opinion? So I think that was a very good discussion.
Yeah, and I know it's CJEU, the European Court of Justice, but still relevant. Again, practitioners need to be thinking about how different parts of the world are approaching the same subject. Like, you know, the facial recognition in Australia.
Yeah.
That, was, again, was an interesting take. Anyway, without further ado, let's allow people to dive into the session. The half hour goes exceedingly quickly, but we'll see how we get on today. So what have you been up to this week then, Kate? I've had an extremely busy week.
I heard you were in audits yesterday, weren't you?
I was auditing yesterday and it was great fun
was
to
it?
Be out. Yeah, it was good, actually good. I was out with Benga, and I think that's the first audit he's done. Mm-hmm. And it was in Leeds, and it was a very complicated environment.
Lots As you like.
Of yeah, lots of large scale personal data, lots of sensitive personal data, lots of really off the wall use cases. And unfortunately, we only had a day on site. We'd had no material sent to us in advance. So all the prep we could do was have a look at the website and have a look at what was in the public domain. So we went in there pretty much blind, and it was that means it's really hard work. But anyway, we got a real good measure of the place pretty quickly.
That's good.
Found
loads
in
specific areas, or
well, the starting point was to try and understand the business model, and it's an internationally owned business. It's got quite a complicated structure and a very diverse set of operations. So that was good. And then we were looking for records of posting activities, which unfortunately didn't exist. So that put us on the back
foot. Not surprised me.
Because it was really hard to then hone in on any specifics. Although I really do understand their business model, because I've worked in that industry. Mm-hmm. So I was able to use that experience to real dive into it without a roper. But that was a bit of a shock, if I'm being honest.
Okay.
You know, that we've got this far on and there's no definition of processing activities. And then we went on from there, and we were there at Benga got there at 7:20 in the morning. So it was an early start for him, and we didn't finish till 5, but it was a fully intensive day, non-stop. And
he
it was
really
so good,
excited
actually.
To start thinking, yes.
Yeah. So we enjoyed it. And now, of course, we've got the write-up to do. We've sent a list of stuff that was promised to us. Again, fortunately, we took good notes and we're going around. You promised, you said this existed and this was evidence of training records. And so please can we have those now? So we'll see what comes through. And then the write-up starting this afternoon. After this, I'm going to start the write-up and carry it on next week. But it was really good fun. I like getting out auditing. It's really good. It's kind of an audit. I've got one in a fortnight. And again, I've had a pre-call with them because it's a that is a really strange organisation. Where are we going next? It's a religious organisation. So again, it's an interesting environment. It's going to be again quite complicated. There's lots of, I won't go into too much detail, there's lots of interesting stuff got on in the past.
I'm quite curious about
recently
that one, you know.
Surfaced, so we're interested to see how that's all being handled. So I had a pre-call with them. They've actually asked for 2 days on site because they recognize they're not actually that mature in terms of their governance framework, so they want to use it more, much more of a workshop than an audit. So I'm really looking forward to that because again, we can do a lot of knowledge transfer and get them up to speed with why they should be doing things and what they should be doing. And it's good that people are not trying to pull the wool over our eyes because that usually doesn't work. So that'd be good. I'm doing that in a fortnight. I'm doing that with other Katerina, who are kicking Katerina, as Barry would call her, as opposed to Curly Kerr Katerina, which is you. And so that and I've done a lot of other stuff, but that was basically the highlight of my week, was getting out auditing.
I can see from your smile that's exciting. No, I knew you liked it. To be honest, my week has been wild. So we had on Friday, so a week from today, we had our DPP's party, which was great.
That was really good fun.
Really good fun. I'm sure that everyone that has a LinkedIn or followers on LinkedIn saw David Hendry applauding Kathy in our post, which was great, very fun. Then I did an on-site visit a few days ago. I'm preparing myself a report now and an action plan. Actually, it was a great question that were raised, and I always like to go on-site because I feel that having the face-to-face with the customer and actually understanding the approach and be able to see what they are telling me rather than just believing their words, because sometimes they have no idea what they're saying is great. A lot of questions around CCTVs. So I had a chance to kind of go around CCTVs. I realized for the first time, never came across when I went on sites, CCTVs being installed in the offices. So directed to the employees themselves. So very interesting discussion around it. Actually, one of the points that I would like to talk about today now in news, and as well about training. So it's a big organization where like more than 200, 300 employees, a lot of heads of departments. And we had this big meeting when we realized that there was no training whatsoever. The only training that they had was like the induction checklist training, and that was it. So very, very good points discussed as well. And finally, about your audits, one that you did with Joe a long time ago. Now we are dealing with all the SaaS because of the incident that happened. We all the SaaS, so a lot of work going on tonight. So exciting for that.
Busy,
very
busy.
Excited, very busy. But yeah.
Now it's interesting you talk about CCTV because there's this relatively small site, but there's 320 odd cameras installed, extremely high definition for a variety of purposes. And they do use quite regularly covert internally facing cameras to monitor areas of high value, such as IT stock and food stock, food things as well. So
to prevent stolen theft.
Prevent the theft of steak, apparently, and fillets of salmon and things of that nature. So again, that was quite interesting. The beauty about auditing, really, and this is why I think it's a good transitional step for the support officers to consultant, is that you go on site, you're faced with all these challenges and this information. You're not expected to formulate an opinion of compliance at that point. You take it all away, you consider it in the round, you know, and you have a look at all the different bits of evidence. When you're out there as a consultant, you're like, you know, you are on the spot with your customer, and he says, right, what they say, I'm doing this. then look at you. They expect a response, you know. But when we're auditing, you're kind of like, yeah, okay, fine, yeah, with information gathering, I'm not required to give you a response right now, type of thing. So I like, that's one of the reasons why I like auditing. I think it's a really good step for the DPSOs to take before becoming a consultant, which is why I'm taking Katrina out on the next one. So tell me about your CCTV. There's been quite a lot in the news, actually. I was gonna talk about, you know, actually something that's probably relevant, a lot on stuff, mm-hmm. facial recognition.
Yes, I saw it's exactly the kind of stuff bone. So on my CCTV thing, the mainly questions were around employee monitoring / surveillance, all the cameras around it, and as well outside of the scope, so lawful bases, what we need to have in place, DPIAs, and everything around it. And to kind of make it cross with the news, a piece of news that I've seen, is that ICO steps up scrutiny of police use of facial recognition technology, and they audited the South Wales Police and Gwent Police as well. And I feel like with these authorities and the police, etc., I feel that it's kind of a split opinion always. It's like, in one hand, we have obviously the police force is saying, well, this is a game changer potentially for crime prevention, because we can catch the suspects more quickly. We can link the images to kind of our CCTVs. We can help with identification. But as we had our chance to speak in previous episodes and with inside as well, there are other risks, a lot of risks associated with state protection and massive surveillance that can happen, even discrimination, because that can happen. We have already talked about it, and people being misidentified as well. So I feel that this does not fit outside of the law. There are a lot of things to be discussed. I 100% agree that it's a game changer, but I'm always like, as soon as I heard CCTVs, facial recognitions, because we are talking about biometric data, so special category data being involved, etc., kind of makes me like a lot of concerns, a lot of flags being raised.
Yeah, quite right. One of the things that was really interesting about what came out of the audit yesterday was that this client is also using facial recognition technology. In fact, they haven't deployed it yet. Their camera systems are capable of using ANPR and FRT. Mm-hmm. And the context that they're in means that they can justifiably use it for public order, security of the public, safety of the public. Being careful how I describe things here. But they're also acutely aware of the intrusiveness of facial recognition technology monitoring crowds, and they also are aware of the real problem if that data is breached, you know, the massive implications of the data breach. So they're trying out something different. They haven't tried it out yet, but they're investigating something different where they're using posture analysis. So what they do is, right, they see somebody coming into their environment that looks suspicious. And then there's an AI agent that looks at the way that person is moving, the colours that they're wearing, and then it'll track them across all these 320 cameras using that information. So effectively what you're doing, I think, is you're using that kind of biometric sample in a much smaller population. So you're looking for that yellow t-shirt, for instance, going through a crowd, or you're looking for that person who's got that particular gait or that particular stance or that particular build. And I think that again seems less risky to me, because it's not biometric facial samples.
Simple. Mm-hmm.
It's something that is, it feels like it's less attributable to specific individuals unless they're in a much smaller population, if you see what you mean. So that I thought was quite interesting, because I think that to me was like, be interesting to have a look at that.
So you basically, it's tracking like behavior and kind of, but people like where you're wearing behavior,
so
like how they act.
Yeah, shoplifter maybe.
Yeah.
You know, somehow the AI or some human says, oh, that person's acting suspiciously. Let's tag that person. So the AI would then have a look at that person, how they're holding themselves, how they're moving, how tall they are, what they're wearing. And it would use that data to track them across their site using all 320 cameras. So it's stitching the images together effectively and saying, oh, that yellow T-shirt. I used to work on security cameras when I was a student in a massive Asda down in London. And it was such a boring job. It's the most boring job I've ever had. The only thing to keep you occupied was to try and pick on a shopper that was coming into the store in the car park and try and follow them all the way around the shop.
Literally the win of your day.
It was the only way to keep myself interested. But when they walk under a camera, of course, it's one of these whirly ones, you lose track of them. So you're spinning the camera around and then you look at a different one. And we had these roaming cameras at the back of the store, that behind the tills, that was how you catch all. You look down every aisle. Ah, there they are. Then you're right. Okay, I'll go into that
camera.
Gotcha. So, this is technology now doing this, and you know, effectively doing what I was doing, which is, oh, that's that person wearing that, you know, that particular thing, and moving in that particular way, or maybe with a group of the people. But because it's not using biometric samples of a face or a fingerprint, which once they're compromised, then they're compromised. Then I think it's a lot. To me, it seems a lot less problematic. But I'm not really thought about it much, because it only came out of the audit yesterday afternoon.
I can see that Ailey did category data, like disabilities.
Yeah. I mean, another thing that was quite perverse is this, isn't it? So they have they take lots of photographs in their environment and videos and things because of what they do. And of course, there's tons of people in these photographs. But the ICO's view is, if nobody is the focus of that photograph, it doesn't represent personal data, which is interesting. And they also take the view that people with disabilities exhibited in videos, there isn't special category data unless the purpose of the video is to highlight or record the disability or the medical condition. So you would probably argue that actually we're not trying to identify this as special category data. In what we're doing, we're using it for a different purpose. Therefore, it probably isn't special category data. And I use the word probably because, again, some of this guidance is a bit grey.
Yeah, I mean, the use of the CCTV footage and the records, etc., is actually a very interesting point, because it's true that the organizations potentially would say, well, this will be for security purposes. We will just use this in these cases for this purpose, etc. But actually, if there are situations where, imagine, you film or record, well, some incident, well, that will be considered security as well, isn't it? But anything else, and you actually, instead of the group of people that you are recording, you are focusing now in the individual, from that purpose, will be considered their personal data.
Absolutely,
for that specific individual.
Yeah.
But for other one, it's not, it's just a group picture. So, to be honest, it's actually very subjective in the end of the day, isn't it? Depends on
it is. And this is why the interview question that I put on your consultant interview is, personal data is ... You know,
so anyone is here that is recording, you know that.
The most confusing thing ever. You know, because you could again take what you just described one step further. You got a general shot of people in and they're in the background, not the foreground, therefore not personal data. Yeah. But you notice something about somebody. Oh, look, they're picking someone's pocket. They are the focal point. That is now personal data of them. What if a witness that comes forward, you know, then they become a data subject as well. That becomes their person. So the whole thing's just a moving target, which again is quite, and Vaughan is absolutely spot on. You know,
absolutely.
Most of the time it all depends, you know. But we're looking for more than two word answers, Vaughan. So you couldn't reply to our interview question with, first letter is ... It depends ... I think we'd get the gist of it, but I think we'd probably want to explore that a little bit further in an interview situation.
Well, no, Charlotte just for us.
Well,
No, but that gives me like a good bridge for one other piece of news that we saw, that is, the Court of Justice clarified that pseudonymized data is not always personal data.
Yeah. That was interesting.
What do you think
about
this? I think it's a good reminder that I think it always depends, isn't it? And their protection is not always black and white, and is always, well, depends kind of thing. So it was actually very, very interesting, this one.
Yeah, and I like the fact that it's woolly and grey, because it, as a practitioner, it means I can work my way around it. But what it means for many people is, you know, if you're you know, not necessarily doing this all the time. So again, where I was yesterday, the DPO is a statutory appointment because to do lots of large scale monitoring as a core activity of their business. And that person's doing it part time. Now, okay. You know, that person's not exposed to this every single day. They're not thinking about it in the same way that we are every single day, and therefore hasn't necessarily got the same confidence in making decisions in these woolly grey areas, which is great because it means that's why we've got a business opportunity, really.
Yeah.
So I like the fact it's grey and woolly. Most people, I think, would like a bit more certainty. Rather than it being woolly. But this whole thing about pseudonymized data, you know, is subjective, and it all depends on the capability of the recipient. But again, if the recipient's capabilities change, then that changes the nature of it being pseudonymized. It's not then pseudonymized personal data. Well, it's not then pseudonymized data. Just to be saying, it becomes personal data.
Personal
now,
data,
what they were saying is that that's got an implication to privacy information, particularly, again, I've read some really interesting stuff this week about joint controllership. There's a brilliant article in the PDP journal, which I'll put a link on in here, about joint controllership. Because I'm working with an international business about that their owner is saying that they want to be joint controllers of this organization in Jamaica. And the whole joint controller agreement is written... The parent company is Italian, is written in GDPR speak, and it don't make sense in Jamaica because the Jamaican law is different. So and so we've pushed back and said, well, we ain't joint controllers, really. You know, we're independent controllers. And, oh, no, we're joint controllers, I said. So this article in PDP Journal, I think it's, again, a really good read. But it was good, that pseudonymization piece, I thought. It was, again, makes you stop and think, doesn't it, if you've got time?
Yeah. I think I had a chance to kind of give a quick look on the actual decision. And I think the key point that the court kind of presented is whether it's personal data, yes or no, will depend on the context. So it's kind of, well, the question that we always kind of ask, isn't it? Like, could someone reasonably be re-identified, like, can we reasonably re-identify that person? And if yes, under UK GDPR, but if no, it's not. But again, I understand kind of the idea behind it, like the context around it, because I remember when I joined DPP and you helped me actually with a piece of work about pseudonymization, anonymization, because it was a demographic case and a lot of numbers, a lot of data, so no actually personal identifiers. And you may raise it at the time and kind of kept my mind, because it will depend, because if you're talking about thousands and thousands of people, generic information, actually, it's absolutely fine.
Yeah.
But if we're talking about even demographic data, no personal identifiers involved, but just two or three people in that scope, well, will depend and can be re-identifiable, isn't it? So it's quite interesting, yeah.
Yeah, there's just this kind of, what they've said is pseudonymization is not automatically personal data for every actor who processes such personal data. Therefore, you've got to do a risk assessment effectively on everybody who might be a recipient of that information. To us as privacy practitioners, why wouldn't you? That makes perfect logical sense.
Yeah.
You're going to do that anyway, mentally. What I guess we should probably do is write down our assessment, make sure we've got, you know, a defensible position and documentation as to why we are assuming, you know, something about certain people. David's got his hand up.
Yeah, David returned.
Hi, David.
After a while.
David, hello, how are you doing?
Yeah, I'm okay. Yeah, I know. I was going to raise this. I thought it was a really interesting piece. I think it goes a lot further than that. And there are a lot of major technologies that we use, big business are using, that are using pseudonymization as a technique to leave a record as identifiable as a single record, but essentially treat it as anonymous. And it's always been a reasonably grey area until this decision sort of come back and re-established it. So we use a number of technologies that have a one-way pseudonymization algorithm. We have no way to re-identify the data. However, you know, there are still some risks involved that, you know, we could pass a further identifier to make that record re-identifiable. And we've always treated it as if it's still covered by the GDPR. And this has sort of brought that a little more into light. It's given us more scope in which to more easily deal with these, with some of these suppliers, especially when we've got, you know, there's pieces under, and I know this is more a UK UK podcast, but there's pieces under Italian law that makes some of the monitoring that we're looking to undertake around business process could be seen to sit outside what's allowable under the law of employee monitoring. However, if you can prove it's entirely anonymous, you're good. And now what we've got is the courts, the European courts, coming along and providing us a decision that says if there's no opportunity for the third party to re-identify, which there isn't, we're fully pseudonymizing it with a one-way algorithm that they'll say is not re-identifiable, we're in a better position to at least start to make the arguments that we can process that. So I think it's quite a major finding. I think there's another piece. Oh, sorry, Phil, go on.
No, carry on. I was going to say, I was just agreeing with you, yes, but carry on.
I was going to say, I thought there was another really interesting piece that might have actually more, and I was thinking that more for UK, was their ruling that opinion is the personal information of the person that made the opinion, not necessarily the person about the opinion. And we always get people looking to disclose opinion of them, which would be about themselves, in subject access requests. However, this suggests that it's the data of the third party who had the opinion. Therefore, in theory, you could argue it just wouldn't be discoverable. If it's not factual, if it's opinion, I think it begins to make a position. And I've not had this request since since the case came through, so we'd have to sit down and talk it through. But high level, I think it begins to make the position that you could take opinion out of a data subject access request about the third party, because it's of not only a, you know, you've always had to discuss could it identify the other party. Now you've got a ruling that says it's their third party data, therefore you're disclosing the data of a third party to another third party, which I think makes for an interesting thought.
It does, and it makes for considering whether it would be reasonable in the circumstances, as the lingo goes, to disclose that. But that again was really interesting. But I mean, the European Data Protection Board guidance on what is personal data does say, I think, use the example that a car mechanic services a car and writes up a report. That report, you know, is the personal data of the car mechanic. Or a doctor writes a medical report. It's dual personal data. Relate to the doctor and it relates to the patient. So I think that's always been, again, it's always been there just a little bit. It just complicates personal data. The whole notion of personal data should be straightforward, and it isn't at all, which I love.
Which keeps most of the people on this call employed, I would suggest.
It's very true. Right. And that's why Vaughan is right. It depends.
But thank you for coming on, Dave, and raising that. You're right. The personal opinions bit was really, really, again, that was one of the other really good things about this ruling. I know it's European, and a lot of the people here probably have got some European dimensions to their operations, but it's all relevant. It's all the same law drafted in the same way, maybe interpreted slightly differently.
And this is always log a lot, even if it's like happening in the European kind of jurisdiction, I think is a lot of implications for us, not only because we have so similar laws, but actually because when we are trying to build our own argument, it's always important to understand what is happening outside of the UK, to kind of empowering our argument, our views, our opinions, our way to deal with any cases. But I think of these opinions, the comments, So as such an interesting point of this, because as David and yourself, Phil, were mentioning, for SaaS is something that normally, potentially around the employee ones, are always within the scope of the SAR. Can you please just include any comments, any opinions, any reports, anything else that kind of were made about me? So actually this, well, could change something, I don't know.
Yeah. Now, a couple of other things I wanted to quickly highlight. We're running out of time, would you believe? We need to extend these, I think.
Oh, God.
the NHS Data Security Protection Toolkit has been revised. I'll put a link in here. There's fairly minor revisions, but again, anybody that's having to complete that needs to know that for next year, there's some changes to it. I saw that a care home director had been fined and acquired a criminal record for failing to respond to SAR, and in fact for deleting data relating to a SAR, which is a criminal offence, as we probably all know. So that was interesting. And the other thing I wanted to talk about, which I haven't really got time to, is that this is a couple of weeks ago, the CNIL, the French regulator, fined Google and Shein hundreds of millions of euros, 150 million euros in the case of Shein and 325 million euros in the case of Google for cookie non-compliances. Now, with the DUA Act upping the penalties from 500K up to 4% of global turnover, I'm just wondering, although I read an interesting article which was speculating whether the ICO would actually get their finger out and start levying massive, you know, relatively massive fines for cookie non-compliance. Yeah. So that, again, I'd probably talk about that next week, because that could be, you know, what basically the article I read was saying is that this is now shifted from being a low risk thing to being a really high risk thing, particularly because most of the audits we've done, in fact all the audits we've done on cookies, have demonstrated that there isn't really cookie control. There is no cookie policy in terms of how cookies get deployed, who manages them. There's no register or list of what's being deployed. There's no process for deploying them. There's no process for decommissioning. There's no thought as to what they're doing, you know. So in my experience, cookies are out of control. Now, if you're a big site, you know, you might find it, you get a big fine. So it has to go up that risk register to be right. This could be quite serious now. So maybe next week we'll drill into that in a bit more detail. I can't believe these sessions go so fast.
Half an hour. Augie's boss of all. All right. He's always good.
Just quickly, have you seen anything else that's really interesting that we need to highlight?
Well, aside from the fact that students linked to the majority of cyber attacks in schools, I thought that was very interesting. Apparently, there was a study that said that 57% of insider attacks in schools are actually provoked by the students themselves. Right. I thought that was actually very interesting, and to explore like why and how is this even possible. And well, again, the facial recognitions about the audits that ICO is doing and all the notifications that ICO is preparing. And actually the Ofcom is doing some searches from 5 or 6 big organizations around the age mechanism. So, yeah,
that'd be interesting. I read the ICO's, they did this parliamentary statement about facial recognition technologies. And again, I was a bit disappointed because I didn't really take a stance on it. You know, everyone's getting their knickers in a twist about live facial recognition technology and the way it's being deployed out in commercial organizations. I'm not sure people are particularly bothered about the national security and police. Yeah. But when supermarkets are rolling it out, you know, people and other places, people are, I think, justifiably thinking, what's going on here? The ICO really didn't just sat on the fence with it, you know, and they said, you know, our job isn't to, yeah, our job isn't to endorse or not endorse technologies. Our job is to help people understand how to comply with the law with it. But I think they need to be a bit stronger, personally.
It's insufficient, I think. I mean, I feel the ICO on this side is just, it's not scared the word, but he doesn't want to say too much, I would say, because they're scared probably like to say something that shouldn't or etc. So they prefer
they've got a tricky job. But then you get poor old Serco, for instance, investing millions of pounds in a system, doing a DPIA on it and thinking, yeah, this looks okay. The ICO hasn't outlawed this, therefore we're probably all right. And then they say, oh, no, you can't be doing that.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, in terms of this, the South Wales Police, it was actually, I was wondering why were these two the ones under this facial recognition audit from the ICO, where apparently one of them actually, back in 2020, the Court of Appeal, they actually had some issues at the time. So that's why they are being focused now. Yeah. And they said that they found a high level of assurance without further details on that. So I'm actually quite curious to understand why. What means high level of assurance?
Yeah. Well, now I'm afraid we've gone over. You talk too much, Kate. You know. And there's only two of us. Imagine if there'd been three of us.
I know.
So we're trying to do half an hour. I suspect we'll push it out to 45 minutes, I would have thought.
So, yeah. We had to be anyway, focused, to be honest, but well.
Yes. So listen, thank you very much, Kate, thank for joining me today. And thank you, everybody else, for joining. And thank you, Dave, for jumping in and sharing your thoughts. It's really good to get people's experience and opinions on here as well. So without further ado, have a fantastic weekend, everybody. And we look forward to seeing you next Friday.
Yes. Thank you very much. Bye. Have a great weekend.
Thank you so much, guys.
Bye.